Tervetuloa, welcome Polina and welcome all the listeners and tervetuloa kuuntelijat. We will be speaking in English even though Polina Polleda here is Belarusian, but Belarusian language is a different language. It's not Russian language. By the way, is your language Belarusian language or Russian language? Do you speak both or is one better than the other?
Well, right now I try to speak Belarusian much more than in my childhood. But yeah, in my family nobody spoke Belarusian. Like everybody was already Russificated, I would say. Yeah, so I had to learn it from the beginning. And now I learned Ukrainian too, so
yeah.
I speak very strange mix of Ukrainian, Belarusian, Russian, and now
that's,
Finnish.
That's
too.
Wonderful. Yes, sinä puhut suomea. Polina Polleda puhuu myös suomea because you now live in Finland. And in this interview, we are going to your background, your personal background as an artist, and your personal background as a Belarusian artist, and what is going on now in Finland. But also, of course, we will have to talk about the Belarusian politics and a bit of Ukraine and Russia, countries at war. But let's begin with you, Polina. You have been in Finland for quite some time. Originally, you came here in April 2022. I remember when you came, we met in some kind of an artist at risk gathering in Helsinki, but you are not living in Helsinki, you live in eastern part of Finland.
Yes.
And how are things there?
Well, it's pretty sad situation now in eastern Finland because most people from little villages and cities are going away from there and moving to the big cities. So there are many abandoned houses and
empty villages, yeah.
Like no jobs, opportunities, and shops are closing all the time. So yeah, the situation is quite sad.
Anyway, you have been able to live there not only because you have been there at first at least as an artist at risk resident, but also you live and work as an artist. Tell something about your art. What do you do there?
I do hand weaving, and it's textile art, and I also do woodworking. So I create equipment for weaving and tools and kangas put and sukkulat.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Just for the Finnish listeners, I have to explain how weaving is kangaspuilla kutomista. It's like when you weave carpets, big things.
And shawls and everything.
Yeah, shaleja, ryyjyjä. But okay, thank you. Yeah,
I also make musical instruments from wood and jewelry.
You make musical instruments?
Yeah.
I knew you have played musical instruments, but you also make them. What do you make? What are they called?
Well, I try to create some original musical instruments that don't exist.
Okay, but they are like some kind of between guitar, banjo, strings.
I was working on a small guitar factory here, and myself, I create strings instruments and some kalimbas and small ones.
I have heard that they work because stories tell that you have been playing them even in Joensuu somewhere, even in public places.
Yeah. I also a musician, non-professional musician, but I have like a collection of musical instruments, including the ones that I made myself. And I do and promote the idea of holistic orchestras. So I collect people together, musicians and non-musicians who never had experience with musical instruments. And I show them how to play instruments intuitively and create beautiful sounds and make it easy for people to get involved and to enjoy music, even if they never had this experience before.
That sounds really, really great. How are people in Karjala, Karelia district? How are they? What do they think about it? How do they take it? are they with you? You have been. I know, especially in Joensuu, you have had exhibitions in galleries. But did the Karelians come and play with you?
Yeah, not just Karelians, also people from all over the world who live in Joensuu or in area around. Like they come, yeah, from different countries and Finnish people too. It's very, very nice experience because everybody can connect through music. You don't need any language for it, and it's like music is like emotional language that everybody can share.
Oh, I love that you are saying that, because I have musical education on piano and other stuff, and I have learned to read music. I have never had a teacher who could have said to me that you don't need a language for that. Very much have needed that, but yeah, that's a wonderful artistic approach. I appreciate it, and I really want to come there and play with you.
You're very welcome.
Lovely, thank you so much. But let's go to more gloomy things. In April 2022, you had to leave Belarus. But before that, in summer 2020, things were in turmoil in Belarus. But many people thought that it could also be turning to something really beautiful, because you had elections in Belarus. They were strongly falsified by current president Lukashenko. People went to streets to support Yelena Tsikhanouskaya, who wasn't originally becoming a president. It was supposed to be her husband, but Sergei Tsikhanouski had been arrested. All this was happening. Where were you at that time, and what did you think about it all?
Well, I was with my people, mm-hmm. of course. Like, I wasn't protesting on the streets of my city, like whole August and whole September.
Well, which city?
Rechitsa. I was living in Rechitsa.
Yes.
Rechitsa at that time. It's near Gomel. It's southeastern part of Belarus.
And it's near Ukraine.
Yeah. It's pretty close to Ukrainian border. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we were protesting together, of course, because like so many people got tortured in jails, and dozens of people died, and including in Gomel, young people, brave, nice people, and of course, like, there were no families that were not somehow connected to these victims. Like, every family had had relatives or friends who were tortured, who were persecuted very badly by police. So we all went out to the streets, of course, because we didn't want it to proceed. We wanted to end the dictatorship.
Yes. Why? How were these people killed? Were they killed by the police openly or secretly? I have heard that the same thing happened there in Belarus, like what happened much before in Ukraine, in Maidan protests, that actually many people were also killed in the where they were arrested or even in hospitals or something like that. But how was it in your places near Gomel?
Well, some people were beaten so badly that they didn't survive. Some people, while they were arrested, so they were beaten and died because of it. And some people died in hospital later after being tortured.
Mm.
Some people were killed, like right on protests with bullets.
But they were killed by the police or army or both?
Both police, and we also had these kind of special forces who were dressed like dressed in casual clothes and in masks, who are also kidnapping people and beating them.
Do they belong to the Minister of Interior, or who is commanding the special forces? Or are they directly under command of the regime?
I think they are.
Yeah.
They're all directly commanded by Lukashenko. And
yeah. So it was the president who had lost the elections who commanded all these forces to come and kill their own people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big turmoil, and as it happened, many, many protesters were imprisoned, also journalists and writers.
Like official numbers are something around 10,000, but I know that there are much more people, much more. Like, even 10,000, it's a lot. It's like, it's a lot, but there are many people's there are many people who didn't report they've been persecuted just to stay safe, to keep safe their families, so they don't get anywhere. Information about them don't get anywhere. Like, if they stay in the country, they don't make any claims about their persecutions. So the amount of people who are persecuted is much, much higher than official numbers.
Yes, but why are these people silent? Is it that they are threatened themselves, or is there some other reasons, or is it just the general fear which makes people sort of paralyzed?
Yes,
what do you think?
I think because when you make it official, when you make it clear, when you write to human rights organizations that you have been persecuted, it kind of puts you in danger of next persecution in the future. Like, when they stay silent, they can keep themselves out of danger. If they can't go out away of country, they usually stay silent just to keep safe their families and friends.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's how it works. Well, luckily, some people have been released, some really big figures, like, for example, Jarhei Janowski himself, but he has also left the country. I think he's in Vilnius with his wife, Yelena Tsihanouskaya, who became sort of de facto president. I mean, president supported by the people. Or do you support Tsihanouskaya? What do you think about the politics?
Well, of course, I supported Tsihanouskaya like a lot in 2020. Like, for me, she was like the best candidate, and I would even vote for her if we would have real elections, just because she's a mother and a woman, and she never wanted a power. Like, and I think that's played a big role why people believed her, because she didn't want power. She didn't want to rule. She didn't want to control. And she was just uniting people in 2020. Like, her biggest role and very the most important role is what that she united everybody. Like, when before the day of elections, Lukashenko was traveling to military bases. She was traveling to from city to city. Like, she had this crazy schedule. She visited all little cities in Belarus, like every day, every single day, and she was collecting people together, and people could see how many we are, like how big numbers we are, people who don't support Lukashenko, and we could see each other, and we could feel less fear.
So people had actually never realized that there was an opposition in Belarus, even those who were the opposition themselves, like you and your friends, you didn't realize that you are many people. Was that what happened?
Yeah, I think so. Like, we didn't expect that there are so many people like that. There are millions of people who are ready to go on the street. Like, even in the little, in the very smallest cities and villages in Belarus, people were coming out on the streets in 2020. It was amazing. Like, of course, we were... We had in Belarus, we had our own like oases of friends and our close one with whom we could discuss politics freely in our kitchens, you know. Mm-hmm. But we didn't expect that the level of kind of protesting movement is so high among other people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was hundreds of thousands of people were there, especially, of course, in capital, in Minsk, but yeah. Also in other cities, it was hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, I think it was like, if like to include every little city, it was like much more than a million, maybe 2 millions of people who participated in protests on one day or another.
Yeah, it's also so difficult to say because some people might have been there all the time and some people were not brain enough to be many, many times. But these protests took for a long time. It was a couple of months, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
When were the elections?
They were in August.
August?
I think in the beginning of August, on the 9th or something. And then, protests were continuing till the October, I think.
Yeah, and they started in summer.
Yeah, they started straight after elections.
Mm. And they started. Yeah. Okay.
So in the night of election, like they started. Yeah.
So August, from August to October.
I think maybe in Minsk it was much longer.
Yeah.
But of course, like they were so cruelly stopped in the end of September, and so many people got tortured, and too many people, they started to give like a big sentences, like a year, two, three. It was no more like 15 days in prison. So
yes.
People were scared. And like in my city, I think in the end of September, in October, the protests stopped already. Some people were traveling to the bigger cities because there were more people there.
Mm-hmm.
Who could to travel there, but of course many couldn't because they had kids and jobs. And
yes, but anyway, even 2 months is 8 weeks, 1 month is 4 weeks, so even 4 weeks to have the sort of protests, that's a big, really, really big deal. I have interviewed 1.5 years ago, I interviewed Svetlana Alexeyevich in Berlin, and she's the Nobel Award winner writer, and she was in Minsk at that time, and she remembers that, and she says that it was like a lovely short time of freedom when people were dancing in the streets. She lived right in the center of Minsk, so she remembers that. But then her friends and some people who were really concerned for her well-being were saying that she can't come out anymore because she had heard that the police were actually shooting people with whatever bullets they had at that time, but it was not really safe. And soon after, she had to leave. So you had to leave. You didn't go then, but how did things change in Lukashenko's Belarus? What we did not know at that time was that Belarus was also getting, or the southern part of Belarus was getting ready for war. Russia was to attack Ukraine. Later, it became really obvious when the southern part of Belarus was full of tanks. But how did it go in your home area?
Well, like in my opinion, I think that Lukashenko sold kind of Belarus to Putin right after the protest. I think they planned already to attack Ukraine. because yeah, our protests were so huge, and at some point we felt so free, and like it was like very artistical even like this activism of Belarusians, and it but it never was safe, like even in the most kind of free time it never was safe, like people were kidnapped and tortured and everything still, but still we were so many yes. on the streets, and we felt like
and you
a lot of power
to soldiers. I saw many, many photos of protesters yeah. giving flowers to soldiers. So in case somebody was beaten up, I have heard that it was never that the protester beat somebody.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
was totally
yeah.
vice versa.
Another yeah, we were like super peaceful and super... It was like people were taking shoes before standing up on the bench. You know,
oh,
it
oh,
was very
sweet.
Cute at that time. Like, yeah, we kind of, it was very important for us because like while propaganda was telling that we are extremist and we are like terrorists and we want to ruin everything, we kind of tried hard to be like the best protesters in the world, like to show that we are like we are educated and very culturally developed people and very progressive and very kind of kind and very polite and kind of, and we segue in every law that is not against human rights.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very important for us, but right now I have like this very sad feeling that that it was so kind of helpless, and like we didn't know back then what will happen with Ukraine and how many lives it will cost, like that we lose, you know.
Yeah,
we didn't know that, because if we would know, maybe we would be much more harder in our fight. I don't know.
But hey, don't blame yourself, because also symbolically it has been very important for people in Ukraine to see how much you were able to do, and also everywhere elsewhere in the Europe you showed that you are not a silent North Korea in the center of Europe. Well, I don't know if North Koreans want to demonstrate all the time, but they are silenced if any nation could be, and you in Belarus you were not like that. Also what is really, really clear in this case is how afraid Putin is of all of you guys, because you protesting in Belarus, that's his biggest nightmare. That's such a big nightmare that what would happen if the Russians got an idea to do the same in Russia? By the way, when this was cruelly stopped, like you put it, was Russia involved in the politics openly? I mean, there have been strong rumors that Lukashenko asked Putin for help, but were there visibly any kind of Russian interference?
Yeah, of course there was interference. Like many protesters are telling stories about this police and special forces who were beating them, that they seemed not from Belarus, like that they probably were like some Putin's help.
Do you recognize the Russian dialect and Russian Belarusian dialect?
Yeah, it's also about like these bad things they were saying to the protesters they were beating.
So they were clearly saying that they are not
like
Belarusian.
Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. There were rumors like that. Also. Also, of course, like at some point, this torturing in jails and killing of people went so far that even our propagandists who were working on TV and lying to people like years and years, they started to protest. They said that we will not lie to people anymore because it's impossible what's going on. Because they also had like relatives and friends who were tortured in jails. And this is
sorry,
the time.
Sorry, who were those who said we will not lie to people anymore? Who were they?
Like the official propagandists who were working on Belarusian.
Can you say names?
Official TV. No, I can't say names, but can't tell names, but. There were quite many of them that they kind of stopped the translation.
Ah, sort of like the national TV presenters or news anchors.
Yeah, yeah.
People like that.
Yeah.
Public figures working on television.
Yeah. So Lukashenko went to ask help from Putin, and Putin sent his propagandists to work on our TV.
Aha. Yeah. So Russian propagandists were working on the Belarusian, in the Belarusian TV.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They could lie easily. They had no any friends or relatives who were tortured in jails. So.
But did the Belarusians believe in their lies? Because like you said, like in your home area, hometowns, everybody had a family. Everybody had a connection to somebody who was a victim, either beaten or beaten to death or imprisoned or whatever. How do people take it? What do you think? You are not in Belarus now, but anyway, what do you think?
I think there are something like around maybe 20%, of course not 3% how we were telling on protest, but maybe 20% of people who believe in propaganda. But it's not like rational belief. It's like a cult.
It's like chosen belief that I will start choosing to believe in
because,
Lukashenko.
Mm-hmm. And especially like some people who were against Lukashenko many years, they also after 2020 converted to be his supporter. It also was happening a lot because people have seen this cruelty and they think they were so traumatized by it that they were forcing themselves to believe to propaganda to keep them safe. Like it's kind of delusion that our psychic makes to feel safer.
And then there is this case of the airplane that Lukashenko made a journalist to be taken in Minsk airport, that he was going to flee the country or he was flying over it or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, he was flying through the country, like from Greece, I think, to Vilnius or something.
Yes.
Yeah, and he kidnapped a journalist.
Yeah, but after he was kidnapped, he was made to say something on television that he's for.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of made like they put him in prison first and tortured and everything, and then he became kind of a propagandist.
Yeah. Do you remember his name?
Protasevich.
Protasevich. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was kidnapped. Have you heard anything about him later on?
No, I think I don't want to hear anything about you.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
For
this
me, it's
so
very
cruel.
It's so traumatizing story by itself. Like, I feel very sorry for him. And I just can't. Like, I think it's like a ruined, completely ruined psychic already. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
and this is something actually. I was afraid, like most of all, like not to be imprisoned, not to be tortured or killed. Like for me, the most big fear was always like to become eventually broken, like from inside, to start to believe in some crazy lies. Like because people get broken, like they get broken in prisons, like
of course, they
lose their mind, It's terrible.
And we don't know why they are broken. I mean, some people, of course, they can be physically tortured. They might suffer enormous pain. But
they also threaten.
They threaten their families. They threaten their children. They threaten their parents. Even elderly parents can be threatened. So, or, I mean, maybe never approached. But when somebody is being told that if you don't do as I say, something will happen to your loved ones, we don't know how anyone would react or how I would react. I have no idea. I can't think so far. It blows up my mind. So, but then things escalated. The big attack from Russia to Kiev started on the 24th of February in 2022, basically from Belarus. But it wasn't Belarus attacking. It was Russia attacking, but that was just a short way to Kiev. Well, that didn't go well for Russia. There were the tanks in the fields of Ukrainian farms. When they tried to go back, they were full of washing machines and many kinds of stuff from Ukraine they had stolen. By the way, I have heard that the post offices in the southern Belarus were really stuck because the soldiers were bringing all that stolen stuff from Ukraine and trying to send them to mothers, like washing machines.
Yeah, that's true.
Is it true?
Yeah, that's true. I've seen myself the cars coming with Z kind of letter on them.
Z was the symbol. I don't know if they use it anymore, but it was the symbol of the attack.
And yeah, they were full of stuff and they were passing through Belarus too. So,
oh, were they actually being sent to Russia? Mm? Did they send it to Russia? Was it possible?
Yeah. Of course.
I really feel sorry for the Belarusian post office at the moment, but amazing thing. No, I feel sorrier for Ukrainians, of course. Anyway, then you decided that you had to leave and you left.
Yeah, I would say that after 2022, many Belarusians went out on protests. Like, we have much more people protesting than in Russia. Even so, our persecutions were so much worse at that moment, like after 2020. We already had like these huge sentences. Some people were sentenced to 15 years or 11 years in prison. We have been tortured in prison, and still like more people came out against the war than in whole Russia. I think it's also because we had some positive experience of our protesting. Like, at some point when we were protesting, we could release our prisoners from prisons, like our friends from prisons. At some point, we kind of won. And it gives you so much motivation to proceed, and you start to believe that it's possible that we should go out. And I think in Russia, they didn't have such positive experience, like completely. So they were just looking at us and thinking, oh, like, their protests were crushed so badly and our situation is hopeless. Like, but it's not like that. It's not like that. And unfortunately, it's played like a bad role for Russians.
Yeah.
Our loss. Yeah, but yeah, and many people were sentenced, like thousands were sentenced in 2022, and they started to persecute people even for comments and likes and, you know, like, and subscriptions on like wrong websites and groups in Facebook. So the situation got really harder. And of course, like, much less people were involved in any protesting activity because they were afraid to disappear from their lives for 10 years or five. And the persecutions became like much more cruel because there were not enough people to support. And they just started to catch everybody who were against the war, who was against the war. So
the war, talking about the war, was illegal also in Belarus.
Yeah, sure.
Even though in Belarus it was so visible.
Yeah.
I mean, it was full of tanks. What were the Belarusians told? What was the Russian army explaining? They were saying that it's a special operation. It wasn't, or actually it wasn't that short. Well, it was a war. I'm talking about war all the time. But even though when Putin and his propaganda machine in Kremlin had an idea, maybe it was Surkov who got this idea first, that we are talking about special operation. It was supposed to be 3 days, maximum 3 weeks, to go to Kiev. It wasn't that short of time. Actually, it was zero time. They couldn't go there. They had to leave. They had to retreat. So it sort of dried out this special operation, but it became an ongoing war. It has been totally visible, probably for everybody in the fields of battle. But in Belarus, how did they explain this to you?
Well, they were saying it started like when they started to bring the warcraft in Belarus. They were saying this is starting, but of course we all knew that it's not starting because the amount of tanks, the amount of warcraft was huge, was completely incredible. Like even my city, like there were like these rows of cars, rows of tanks, like endless rows, and we've seen like warcraft on our train station when we were moving to Gomel with kids. Like it was everywhere. It was just everywhere. It was terrible, and a lot of soldiers from all over the regions of Russia, a lot, like all kind of soldiers, and
from Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, remote areas of Russia. Did you see people from Chechnya?
Yeah, Buryatia and Dagestan, from all these regions. Oh. And okay. We could see it, and we thought that it's war. The war is coming. Like we were like rationally, we could understand it, but we couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe it. Yeah. What's happening? Like we understood that it's war. It will be the war. There is no any studies with this kind of scale, but we still couldn't believe it because it was so absurdic, so illogical, so irrational for us to understand why and what for.
Were they drafting young men or whatever age of male people in Belarus as well?
The guys I've seen, the soldiers I've seen in my city were all very, very young. Like they were all like, I don't know. They looked like 18, like 19 years old. They had like commanders who were much older, but the soldiers were all like kids.
Do you mean Belarusian soldiers? Or
no, I mean Russian soldiers.
Russian soldiers in your village passing by, going to the Ukrainian front. Okay, but were they drafting the Belarusian people?
No, at that point, no. And I think like Lukashenko was trying to prevent it till the very end. Like, and he still kind of tries to prevent it, like official involvement of Belarusian army in it.
Maybe. Well, Russia is running out of soldiers the time. So,
but I think Lukashenko is just afraid that like army will go against him. So he just tries to keep them safe.
Whoa. That's a very narrow lifeline. Okay. Yeah. Very weak and narrow.
But of course we have like Belarusians who are fighting on the fields.
Voluntarily.
In Ukraine. Like we have volunteers, like a lot of volunteers who are fighting on Ukrainian side. And unfortunately...
Oh, on Ukrainian side?
Yeah, we have a lot.
But what about the Russian side?
We have also like people who went to work there, like for money. And it's a huge shame. But it is not supported by government. Like quite recently, they actually arrested a guy who turned back from the war, who was fighting on Russian side. Mm-hmm. They arrested him for getting involved in commercial military. So,
So actually, that could be punishable sanctioned in Belarus. So it's not that easy to be a Putin supporter, surprisingly, after all. Okay. Whoa. Well, we don't know how this will turn out, but anyway, it seems that Russia is now in big trouble in its western front, in the Ukrainian front. They are losing enormous amount of soldiers in the fields, and Putin needs to do something. How he will get more men there, I'm well, nobody knows, nobody has a clear view of that. But anyway, one thing which is now going on in Russia, and it's been discussed publicly, but not in Russia. They can't, because they don't have an internet, but we do here in the West. So we are talking about this thing constantly. So in Russia, they have shut down internet. Also, I mean, Wi-Fi from telephones has been shut down, and Telegram has been banned, which is like WhatsApp, but very much used in Russia. How are things in Belarus in this sense? Is this same thing happening also there? What do you think?
No, no, we don't have, like, we have all internet available and all our resources available. They are thinking now, right now, mm-hmm. about blocking YouTube, because YouTube blocked all propaganda channels of Belarusian TV, but nothing else, like Instagram and Facebook and WhatsApp was working in Belarus all this time. So in this way, Belarus is much more free. But in the other way, we have more than 2,000 resources that went into a list of extremist resources and extremist resources.
So these platforms work, but people are not free to post whatever they wish.
Yeah,
they
might
be like investigated.
They kind of blocked, but they make mirrors and people can get there. But the problem is, like, the phone check is so is so popular in Belarus. Like, they were checking phones at some point, even in trains, like from different people, like police was coming in trains and just checking everybody's phone to find if they have these subscriptions on these extremist resources, or if they have some message, or did they like some posts, or like did they write some comments. So they kind of arrest everybody. So people have absolutely surreal life in internet. Like, whatever they read, whatever they do, they keep it completely, like, out of all their devices. Like, they can never keep any photo or any, they can't leave comments, like, they can't leave likes even in social media, because it's all, like, super, super dangerous.
They might get into trouble if they comment on something dangerous, or if they like something which is not accepted by the government.
Yeah, so we kind of have this personal control on, like, a full scale, like, that Russia never had. But at the same time, we have more free internet, except, like, blocked resources of, like, our oppositional medias.
This word extremist, I have to explain it to our listeners, even though I think people who read Voima or listen to this conversation are pretty much on the clear side. But still, extremist is a word that they use in Belarus and especially in Russia. It's the Kremlin word. It means that somebody is against the government, something is for the people. Extremist is a really stupid word, but you can say that like a Red Cross can be extremist at times,
Think, like,
Amnesty or Greenpeace or whatever NGO, or even some kind of a society for protecting cats can be extremist if they interpret that to be risky to the regime. Or how would you say that?
Yeah, like, the good example is Helsinki Committee, human rights organization, is now extremist organization. So even if you are subscribed on Helsinki Committee, Belarusian Helsinki Committee, you are already supporting extremism, and you can be sentenced or like pay, like, a huge fine, like, have administrative case for that.
So actually, any kind of work for democracy can be extremist, interpreted as extremist.
And more of that. Now, right now, they kind of try to, they also try to eliminate Belarusian culture again. Like, quite recently, they arrested people who took part in traditional celebration, spring ritual, kind of, that was traditional for mm-hmm. Belarus, and people were celebrating it like for many, many years, every year in a row. And even some policemen was taking part in it. Uh-huh. But still they kind of arrested a lot of people. Like they tried to erase Belarusian culture again. Like,
and uh-huh.
also because many people started to speak Belarusian after the protests, like to get kind of, you know, like we have this, we try to separate ourselves from Russia. So people who were protesting, they tried to keep their culture alive and they tried to speak Belarusian language and kind of be, to stay out from Russia. So right now Lukashenko's government is kind of trying to stop that, to punish people for supporting like Belarusian traditions.
Well, I guess that really pisses them off in Russian Kremlin, because also, mm-hmm. I mean, not what Lukashenko is doing, but what people are doing, because one thing which is the first reason for the war in Ukraine, well, I think the first reason is the desire for democracy in Ukraine, but the second thing is the Ukrainian culture. Mm-hmm. Russia really wants to destroy that. So it is not, it had the talks about the Nazis in Ukraine, but it's not after any Nazis. It is now blowing up little children's kindergartens and families in totally normal blocks of flats, and it's going after hospitals and anywhere. So it's not looking for any kind of anything but just normal people and their language. So just the war, in Belarus, normal people mm-hmm. and language are in danger.
So it's just a war against freedom, and like all kind of freedoms of identity, of any identity, Belarusian identity or LGBT identity, like everybody who choose diversity and freedom and freedom of self-identification, mm-hmm. they are all like a threat for regimes. Like they all see it as a threat because they dare to to be free.
Yes.
It kind of scares them completely. And right now, like Belarus trying to pass this anti-LGBT, I think they passed already this anti-LGBT law, which we also haven't had before. Like it was many years in Russia, this propaganda, LGBT propaganda law, but we haven't had it. And now they passed this law against LGBT propaganda, mm-hmm. child-free, and like pedophiles. Like they put it all in a row. They just pass this law, like, and it's also kind of moving towards Russia in this way, in this bad way.
They are copying the same thing. Yeah. I think the same is going on at this moment as we speak. It's happening in Georgia too. But
and Kazakhstan,
about LGBT, I have heard, but I'm not sure. So how is it? There has been even pride movement in Belarus, hasn't there? I mean, there were pride parades in St. Petersburg and in Moscow in the early 2000s. Even in the early years of Putin regime, there have been pride marches. But has there been any kind of LGBT movement openly in Belarus?
Openly not, but I think we had like... They weren't so scared like in Russia, and they were having their meetings, and they
were there anything like
celebrations and
bars
and discos and bars and all this stuff was going on. Like nobody was persecuting them
in
so
Minsk.
Much badly as mm-hmm. they are persecuted in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And also on our protests in 2020, there were many people who were wearing the flags, LGBT flags, and kissing on the streets, like when in this moment of freedom.
Okay, so it was dancing and flowers and LGBT rights and everything. Okay, well, that's
really beautiful.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
We have talked almost 50 minutes now, but just last, because I don't want us to finish in really sad feelings, even though I'm not saying that there's anything good in war. It's a terrible war, and it's basically going in Ukraine, and that's wrong, and Russia is doing totally wrong things, and this war should be stopped by Russia immediately, definitely. But now you are here, and you must miss Belarus a lot, and I don't want you to name any of your relatives or anything like that, but tell me something about the Belarus you miss. Like, what is the best music, best food, best kind of art when you fall asleep now in Karelia? Do you feel that you should go to some special lakeside place, or how is it? What is it that you are carrying with love in your heart from Belarus right now?
Of course, like most of all, like people, of course, yeah. But also nature, yeah. I was born on Dnieper River, like Dnipro, that goes after us to Kyiv. So I miss the river a lot, and my little village.
It's a big river.
Little cottage on the river. I missed the place. It was my place of power, of course. And
there are forests, beautiful forests in Belarus.
Yeah.
Do you pick up pick mushrooms?
Yeah. We picked mushrooms. Yeah. Yeah. And what about culture? I think like almost all culture. It was still alive, kind of moved away from Belarus. So it's much easier to see Belarusian culture in Europe now than in Belarus itself. But still there are a lot of people who do art, who proceed to do art. They are just invisible, completely invisible, because, of course, propaganda supports only a very loyal art, which you can't even call art because it's so absurdic to name it art. But all the other art, like real art, happens in like a closets, in a oasis of people who love it and support it, of in the friends circles and like little places. But it's still growing, like, and it never stopped. It never stopped. It just stays invisible for many people.
Art, like visual arts, what about poetry or even journalism? That's not a form of art. I don't mean that. But I think independent newspapers and things like that, they don't survive now at the moment in Belarus. But what about the outside world? Are you able to listen to or read news in Belarusian?
Yeah, sure.
Elsewhere.
Of course, like Belarusian media lost like a lot of American support now, but they're still supported by European Union, and we still have like news from Belarus and media who are working from outside and who try to connect with people inside of Belarus to describe the situation. And what else?
Poetry.
Yeah, maybe. Poetry. But I think, like most of cultural life, like the real value.
I know there have been many theater artists also in Finland from Belarus.
Yeah, in Finland,
so
and Poland.
To perform.
Like, yeah, they all had to leave.
What's the best food in Belarus?
My comfort food is, of course, draniki.
It's like
it's kind of potato pancakes, but like you make it just from smashed, not smashed, yeah, from raw smashed potato with salt. Like it's like the simplest recipe, and some people just put egg and a bit of flour, but it's not like necessarily. So, and they are just fried on a pan with some oil, And we did with Smetana.
Smetana, of course. And maybe I have been to Ukraine and I have been to Russia many times, but I have never been in Ukraine. But do you eat them with mushrooms or cabbage or anything? Or
draniki?
Yeah.
You can eat them with whatever, meat, mushrooms, and vegetables. You can put them inside like a big dranik. Mm-hmm. So there are like many options. But for me, like the simplest version is like my favorite.
Yes. Okay. And what about blueberry jam? Or some kind of berry jam. Do you do sweet versions?
Yeah. Well, sweet versions, we have like these vareniki, mm-hmm, that are like kind of little pancakes. We put berries inside and close it, like ravioli, but with berries. And they are also eaten with smetana.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Hey, I want to visit you in Eastern Finland, in Karelia, and then play music with you, and then you will be cooking too. And we go to sauna and we sing until it's the night is over and we go to sleep
when
the sun is already up, and then we continue with music and eating. Thank you so much, Polina. Kiitos paljon. It's wonderful that you were able to be here.
Thank you for having me.
And, well, now you are in Helsinki. I hope that you will be safe here in Finland, in Helsinki, and also in Karelia, where you live. But most importantly, I hope everything will go well for Belarusians itself and of course, if you want to go back, you should be able to go back and let them all be free, those people who are now imprisoned for their political views or demonstrating. That's unfair. They should be really, really released immediately and no war. And that was the most important things. But lastly, I would like you to say some best regards to some Belarusians, and mind that also the security service might be listening to this. So don't mention all the names of the people you love, but please do say something in Belarusian.
Тримайтеся, мої любимі. Ми обов'язково переможемо.
Kiitos paljon. Thank you so much, Polina.